Yeah, there's a lot of nonsense written and spoken about the fourth industrial revolution and by how some kind of osmosis with zero effort or any kind of application is going to enable the African continent to take some kind of giant leap forward. And while the tech might very well help the process, it's not going to do it itself. Luckily for us, Ronak Kapoldis at Signal Risk and Bronwyn Williams at Flux Trends get that particular fact that it takes an awful lot of work and the tech is just the enabler. But it is an interesting scenario that we find ourselves in, Bronwyn, a world awash with tech, a continent awash with need. How do we marry the two?
Yeah, exactly. So that was part of the problem that we looked at. So if we want to look at future growth for the African continent, we have to think about it in terms of the actual resources we have available to us. And what Africa definitely has in abundance is a youthful, energetic population, and we've got an abundance of natural resources too. So for us, it makes a lot of sense for policymakers and for businesses to look at the real economy rather than just looking at that financialized, virtualized, digital economy when we're talking about a constructive plan for growth across the continent.
Elaborate a little, please, because so often we hear, oh, no, that we have the fourth industrial revolution. That's what will sort it out. It'll all be fine. And then we kind of move on to the next conversation without actually interrogating the detail.
Well, I think one of the first things to notice is, of course, the best business opportunities come down to solving actual problems. And perhaps a lot of the sort of 4IR problems that we're trying to solve can be a little bit like trying to find a nail for our wonderful new hammer. It's all very shiny and very exciting. And the digital economy is absolutely fantastic for accelerating growth and change. But it also means you have to have something underneath that too. And more than that, when we start talking about the differences between like the digital 4IR economy and the real economy, we've also got to think about who we are building these policies, these projects, and what we're investing in for. Because 4IR requires a certain base level of education and access to technology, which you simply don't necessarily have right now. And for us, the priorities for policymakers, when we're looking at economic growth, should really be about getting inclusive growth in that economy as fast as possible. If we've got more people participating, and that means we have to look for opportunities that normal people can get involved with, the people that are around us today.
This notion of inclusive growth is so important. I know it's a proposal that's been put forward very strongly and I think broadly accepted at NEDLAC as far as South Africa is concerned, because we use lots of terminology. In terms of Africa and inclusive growth, take me through your thinking around that, because it's a very, very important piece of terminology.
Absolutely. So when it comes to inclusive growth, it means that we need to get more people involved. We can't just be making the rich even richer and leaving everyone else behind, because that's not a particularly sustainable way to look at things. So when we talk about inclusive growth, we kind of need to look at both sustainability from a social perspective and sustainability from an environmental perspective too. So we don't want to overshoot our resource boundaries and paint ourselves into a different corner by investing in resources that won't be with us if we overexploit them. And at the same time, we want to make sure that growth is inclusive from a social point of view to make sure that more people are getting involved in that economy to create a virtuous circle going forward. That means that opportunities have to be available for the unemployed, for the underemployed, for the semi-skilled and the unskilled too, to get involved. The more people you have involved in economic growth, obviously the more people have a stake in that economy and the more that society can be stable from a social and an economic perspective. And that's why Ronak and I sort of tried to think about this in terms of, if America's looking at a Green New Deal, surely we can do something better in the African continent that reflects our much more sort of colorful population and continent that we have right here. And that's why we've identified really five sort of sectors that we can look at to take advantage of the underutilized resources, both human and natural, across the continent in a way that will allow more hands to get involved and have a stake in growth going forward.
You refer to it as the five color economy. Take me through broadly the principles.
Okay, great. So we call it the five-color or technicolor economy just because it's nice to talk about and makes, as I said, a great contrast to the Green New Deal, which is just one single color in the paint box. And I suppose the first color we looked at there would be the blue economy. And this is taking advantage of Africa's marine economy. That's both from an aquaculture sort of perspective, so actually marine-based farming and agriculture there, but also from a marine ecotourism perspective. Because across Africa's East Coast in particular, due to its geographic positioning and also its natural resource abundance there, it makes a lot of sense to start harnessing that opportunity to bring both tourists and economic development projects to that region. The next color we looked at there would be the green economy. And here the green economy kind of has two prongs if you look at both the renewable energy sector and the agriculture sector. And this pillar really does speak to sustainability at large, because by taking advantage of Africa's land itself and the natural resources and richness there, we are able to sort of kill two birds with one stone, both look at the climate, addressing sort of climate pressures and issues, because Africa is obviously in the firing line for a lot of the climate change we're seeing around us in the world today, and also look at food security, which is going to be Africa's primary problem going forward, because we're going to have ultimately the most populous continent in the world. We've got a lot of mouths to feed, so it makes sense to invest in that sector, but to look at sustainable practices once again and to take advantage of the natural abundance of things like solar and wind energy across the continent too. The third color we looked at was the purple economy, and this one is quite interesting. It actually talks to cultural exports, and as we all know, the world is sort of crying out for culture, and Africa is a largely untapped cultural export, but the opportunity and the upside is quite extraordinary. I mean, UNESCO is talking at the moment that cultural exports are going to account something like 10% of global GDP, and for a case study there, you can look at South Korea, that has actually managed to add $5 billion by exporting cultural products, which is mainly K-pop at the moment. So we definitely think there's an opportunity there to formalize exporting our cultural richness. This could be all the arts that we're talking about right there. And particularly, it's a great opportunity to employ the younger people who are the most underemployed across the continent. The fourth one there would be the gray economy. So it's perhaps a less exciting color, but it's hugely important to try to start formalizing Africa's massive and largely unaccounted for informal markets, to bring the parts of the economy into the formal economy, both from a sort of tax revenue perspective, but also from a workers' rights perspective, because people that operate in the informal economy are unable to get access to things like credit and also have less secure rights as workers. And we really do want people to have more people having more of a stake in the economy. And the last one there, just to go back to how we opened the conversation, would be taking advantage of the 4IR technologies, because we can't forget about the future, even as we are trying to take advantage of the resources we have around us today. But here it would be more about making sure that our education sector is preparing people for a more digitized future going forward, and also then making sure that we are inventing products and services that are going to support those other colors or pillars that we have spoken about to once again build more sustainable long-term growth. So we do think that that sort of black-white economy, that tech economy, does offer opportunity for perhaps a slightly different strata of African society going forward. So that's in brief is what we've been looking at.
No, it's lovely, and it makes so much sense on so many different levels. But again, so many of these reports go, oh, yeah, that's nice. We'll put it with the other reports, and then we'll put them on file 13, and we'll forget all about them. How do we go from brilliant ideas to application? Because I think that's, you know, one of the many weaknesses we have as a society is simply ignoring the opportunities that do surround us.
Well, we start by talking to people like yourself. We have a bit of a platform, but we're also trying to get these ideas into the hands of the ladies and gentlemen who are able to make it happen from a policy perspective. But our call really is to businesses to look at these sectors and to see them as a chance to invest in the economy itself, just not just on top of the economy. And we're thinking about the sort of businesses we want to start and the sort of areas we want to invest in. If we have capital that's looking for somewhere to grow in this very topsy-turvy world we have right now, we really do hope that people will look at these opportunities and see them as an opportunity for real growth, not make-believe growth like you get when you go and pitch to a VC firm, for example, and try and pretend that you're going to get exponential growth and all those lovely hockey stick charts. This is talking about investing in real economy projects that can make a real difference and also have real potential for real profit, because the things that people need are the sorts of goods and services that are going to be like a long-run investment that can be fruitful for both investors and participants in the project.
My thanks to Bronwyn Williams, who is the trend translator and future finance specialist at Flux Trends. Always interesting talking to Bronwyn Williams, who publishes photographs of piles of books that she reads each month. I'm not going to call her a show-off, but my goodness me, she reads a lot of books.